Então, a apresentação do senhor Luc Bas, do The Climate Group, é do tema Mudança Climática para Além do Nacional.
Boa tarde. Obrigado pelo convite. Desculpe-me, mas farei minha apresentação em inglês. I'm sorry I can't do this in Portuguese. I would have considered doing it in Spanish, but then again, I may make mistakes that you may not like. So I'll just go for English. It's my working language. It's not my mother tongue, by the way. My mother tongue is Dutch, which is the language spoken in half of Belgium, this very tiny country in the middle of Europe. I'm with the Climate Group, as already said, and I'll try to take you through very briefly on what the Climate Group is, because I don't think at this point Brazil is really aware of the Climate Group yet, except for some people in Sao Paulo government and in some departments, but except for that, the Climate Group hasn't been very active here yet, so it's an honor to be here, and thank you again to invite me. All right, you will see many beautiful pictures in a while. I'll just kick off now. I'll tell you what the Climate Group is. We are a non-profit organization, an independent NGO, so to say. We work very closely with business and with governments on a pragmatic way. This means we are kind of different from the general environmental NGOs as Greenpeace and WWF, although we work very closely with them, but we try to come up with solutions that same for climate change that make economic sense at the same time. So that's why we work closely with business, there we go, and with governments, obviously. And more particularly, and that's the main reason I'm here, with state and regional governments, the subnational governments. It's only there for a bit more than 5 years. It was started in London. By now we have offices in Beijing, in the United States, in New York, in India, in Australia. And so it's a smaller, but it is a widely spread international NGO. What we know that we are good at is organizing high-level events. We are not an event bureau, but we seem to be able to attract high-level key people to those meetings that we organize. A few of them you can see, and very recently we organized the Climate Week in New York City, which were the parallel events to the UN United Nations General Assembly. And so we had, under the patronage of Ban Ki-moon and Mayor Bloomberg and other distinguished people. So as I said, we work with business and government, mainly at a top level, so we have most possibilities of success, although this is where it's at the hardest. Sometimes bottom-up is important, but as a smaller NGO, we are around 100 people all over the world now. And through those connections, we try to convince the high-level decision-makers, both in business and in government. We have different programs, but we have a new strategic focus since the beginning of this year, and there is a track which is focusing on the global deal, and there is a track which is focusing on what we call global demonstration. This means that we seek policy support and investments from companies to show that deployment of these new technologies that will be key to the solutions on climate change, or one of the solutions, of course, because as this morning mentioned by the Secretary from Minas Gerais, it is not just about technology, it's obviously also about behavior change. And that's why we still have some programs running, which is an awareness-raising campaign, which is called Together, which is big in the US and UK and Australia, and we hope to copy those in the near future. As you saw, the title of my intervention is called Beyond National, and it was actually a kind contribution from Oswaldo Lucón, who said, like, this is maybe the best title for your introduction here, because you're working at the global level, but you're also working on a more subnational level, and so we tie these things together, and so you can really call it Beyond National, both in a sense towards the global level and the other. This part, I will be very brief because I expect I hope also that you know the challenge, the scale of the challenge that is ahead of us. You see, this pathway is a pathway that the IPCC produces, has produced or has proven which is necessary. And this, if you want to go to 50% reduction in 2050, you will see that we have to peak in 2020. And that, of course, a major chunk of that has to be done by the developed world. So there's a high responsibility, but on both sides, and you all know the principle of common and differentiated responsibilities. Maybe just... Okay. I want to be a bit faster. Just to show you this graph, and then I go further. This is to show the importance of, or the risk of late action. You will see that the annual reductions will increase exponentially if we, every year that we delay full and proper action. And it can go to a scale, as you see, if you compare it to, for example, the whole output, the whole emissions of the U.S. energy sector would come in play as to be zero if we would delay another 5 years, actually. So this delay is really incredibly dangerous. This is another graph. This is based on the other, but it shows you very... And this is important, I think, towards the developed world, because where we hope is that business as usual will change with the efforts from also from the developing world. And, of course, you have the comparison to 1990, which is the mantra of the Kyoto Protocol, and also for the European Union, a very important base year, which is causes a lot of discussion, as you know, with the United States at this point. Just to show you that if on this pathway of 40, 50 parts per million, we will be looking at, this is an estimation from McKinsey, and you can always argue about estimations, of course, but the scale is clear. It's about 17 gigatons annually we'll have to reduce by 2020. If you copy this into what they have estimated in the cost curve, then you'll see that, and this is only with the technological solutions, of course, this is what is said. So, and I think, I know this is quite a controversial graph, and it's better not to discuss it now. You may have a look at it again, because it shows you that the potential for the developed world is quite small because of technological, what's already happened by then. Obviously, the 12 gigaton that is mentioned here, which seems like an impressive amount for the developing world, this has to be done with a massive support on the financial side from the industrialized countries. I think this will, I'm going to reduce the intervention, my speech, because it's actually a bit later already. But I just wanted to give these things, these are the core elements for us for a global deal. And it's very general. It doesn't give you figures. It doesn't give you your percentages. But it says what it actually has to be. And sometimes we may forget it. Environmental effectiveness, obviously, we have to be under 2 degrees threshold. We cannot have more. It has to have economic effectiveness. It means that's what the climate group's message is in general, is this is about carbon down and profit up. There is economic opportunities to all of this. I couldn't believe that Sao Paulo would be discussing a law on reducing 20% by 2020 if they wouldn't think there is economic opportunities for it. So this is already... I said it yesterday, it's an incredible effort, and we are crossing the fingers that it will pass the parliament here in Sao Paulo. Fairness, obviously, this has to do with the common and differentiated responsibilities. And then the last one is the one that I think where states and regions may play a vital role in the future discussions, because we can have high hopes for Copenhagen, but we all realize by now that Copenhagen is hopefully a good starting point. It will definitely not be the full agreement that everybody may have hoped for like 2 years ago. You have to be realistic about this, but at least we hope it will be a good framework with these elements in and with a lot of trust. And this trust building is one of the elements where I think if cooperation exists, not only between states and regions in Latin America, in their grouping, or in Australia or in Europe, but if you can cross borders at that level as well, I think that can cause, or that can result in more trust between the national governments. If there is a good cooperation between Sao Paulo, just mentioning again Sao Paulo because we're here, I try to mention much more other states with other examples, but if Sao Paulo and California, for example, can prove that cooperation is fruitful, that builds trust, and I think there is a role for those networks and those cooperation efforts to build trust. I've said this before. This is what the industrial countries have to do, again, according to IPCC. I just mentioned, so what we put in front is obviously could be controversial, but we all know that the U.S. is late. If we push the U.S. now to do the full comparable effort by 2020, as the EU has promised, it will not happen. We all know the discussions now in the Senate, they were going to be very tough, so we have to respect it, but they will have to catch up. And this means that they have delayed and they will pay for it. That's what's happening. I'm telling just the EU position at this moment, you know it. They want to go to 30% if the others follow. Big question is, what does it mean when the others follow? This is a huge question mark. The EU tries to figure out what the criteria should be before Copenhagen. But we as the climate group, we push wherever we can for the EU to do this unilaterally again. They had a good example in the past with the 20%, and they should lead it by example again. Of course, to developing countries, I know this is probably the most controversial slide in my presentation to bring it in a developing country or an emerging economy, as we play to say it. Position of the climate group is not this 15 to 30%. This is just mentioned as the EU position. You know it. It's also quite controversial. But low carbon development plans, really going away from business as usual, these are things that that will be necessary to build, to come to an agreement. The carbon market, just mentioned, there's a financing issue. Again, latest news from the Commission, it's the first of the industrialized blocs. It's not a country, obviously, the EU, you know that. It's the first time that something is put on the table now on what the financing should be. If you look at estimated costs for 100 billion euro a year for adaptation and mitigation in developing countries, 22 to 50 billion should come from public sources, and the EU has, in this Commission communication, committed to 2 to 15 billion. Not enough, far from enough, but at least the first time there's a figure on the table, and it can open up discussions. I think this is obviously a very important one for Brazil. I would very surprised if it's not. One of our programs is focusing on RED, and obviously where we try to push the agenda is in the percentage of the auctioning that should really go to support on the national allocation and towards RED, that it's that developing countries can count on what those forests are really worth for. So that's on that point. Adaptation again. There's a lot of abbreviations, and it was a tough job, I think, for the translators. I'm not sure whether you know what ODA is, but ODA is the Official Development Assistance, which is still ridiculously low and which should increase massively. But there are some movements to replace or to disguise climate change support within that ODA, and it shouldn't be. It should be additional. There's a clear point on that. Technology transfer, we could go on this for much longer, but where I want to come to a bit more quicker is the States and Regions group. In 2005, the Climate Group, together with the Quebec government and obviously, as you see him already, Arnold Schwarzenegger, who has had a leading role with its legislation in California, there was a Montreal Declaration with 30 states and regions from all over the world, and it was the first time that they at least agreed on some common principles on cooperation and on mitigation and adaptation. It hadn't been done before. It was during the Montreal negotiations of the UNFCCC. And since then, this alliance, to which Sao Paulo belongs, together with California, some other states in North America, in Europe, it's North Rhine-Westphalia, Scotland, those that have some weight in the decision-making. It's the first time that this was launched then, and it's still ongoing. It's still growing, and there's still more coming to this alliance. We call this the States and Region Alliance, and you have distributed a bit older leaflet from 2007, which is showing by example or leading by example, and that's what this is about. This is about climate leaders. So those states and regions that become a member or join the alliance have at least have to show that they're leading on the issue, so that they go beyond national. That's the key word here. Whatever it is, it may be on transport politics, it may be specifically on renewable portfolio, it may be on tailpipe emission standards, it may be on many issues, but at least they have to show leadership and they have to have some relevance, obviously, in an economic sense. These are the members of that alliance, and it's still growing. The last new members were first member from Holland and then Ile-de-France, which is the Paris region. It might be interesting for Sao Paulo to connect a bit more on that front because it's a metropole in itself, and it will be working very hard on, and it might be interesting here, it's on electric vehicles, to get electric vehicles really deployed in Paris. Just to give you one example, I could go on and on good practice examples from that list. Many of those belong to other networks and are active, and the other major network that is also represented here and for which Sao Paulo is the co-chair is a network of regional governments for sustainable development. And I think about 15 of this list are also member of that network, which has been advocating internationally. So this is what we try to do in that program. And it's a program, it's an alliance, it's quite large. It's mainly a platform to change best practice. It's also aimed at, from our side and specifically, to identify policy barriers in those regions, to provide better access to those low-carbon technologies, and obviously also to be in close cooperation with their business communities. And that can be either within the country or on an international level. This is just to give you a picture of last year's summit. It was quite successful in that sense that we were able to get Ivo de Boer, which is the Secretary General of the UNFCCC, to come and to somehow, well, it was not officially yet, but he recognized the importance of states and regions to achieve or at least to implement a future global deal. Obviously, there's no plan of any region or state to be in the negotiations itself, but it's really important that they are present and that their role is respected. That is one of the more political efforts that we have. It's this, and you have seen the paper in your documents. Unfortunately, it wasn't translated yet, but it's a paper in English, and that's a statement towards the UNFCCC, which pleads for the recognition of states and regions in the final agreement, whenever it may be reached, or in whatever form it may be reached, but at least that it's very particularly mentioned. And when I say very particularly, it's because it's more than, you know, the local agenda has been recognized in the World Summit. It's in the Commission on Sustainable Development. Local government is already recognized. The city is recognized to play an important role. It's also the villages or smaller departments. But nowhere in any text so far of the UN you see mentioning of states or regions. And that is, we believe, a big hiat or a big gap in those international documents. Again, many abbreviations. The ones you know, I hope it's already OLAGI, from our colleagues here in South America. That's a network of intermediary of subnational governments. Energy 4SD, that's the network which we collaborate very closely with from the climate group because they deal with sustainable development. And obviously that means for a whole lot of parts on climate change. The others are Northern Forum, which are the circular regions around the North Pole. CPMR is a European network, AAR as well, and it would be interesting for us to learn which other networks there may be. I remember that for Brazil there is a network of states and their environmental organizations, which is ABEMA. We hope to see them being active again, so that would be nice. But there is a lot going on, and I think it's also important to fine-tune when and who is doing what, and to collaborate as much as possible and not to diverse or to disperse the efforts. These are some of the reasons why we think it's vital to have this collaboration internationally, because sometimes it's questions. Why does Sao Paulo have to collaborate intensively, or why does Scotland have to collaborate intensively with any other region in the world? Isn't it enough just to deal with the local things and forget about it? So The best practices are mostly present in those regional governments, and it's on the policy level, really. So in the local governments, you've got a lot of more practical experience, but the policy level experience at the subnational level is of such a high quality in many cases that it's so diverse from one country to another that there's a lot to learn from each other. Especially, as I said, planning and implementation. The other important role is there, very important situation between the national and the local. Another point is that the investment that has been done in a region should actually be linked directly to climate policy plans. That should be the future. In some cases, it's happening already, but it should be very tight, very much tied together, and it's more obvious to do it in a particular region with its particular characteristics than in a whole country, and especially those very big countries, which are very diverse. The next one on that list is one that is actually directed to the collaboration, which I will talk just in a few minutes about, is the real, let's say, with the least developing countries, or unfortunately, in this case, there's many of them in Africa. And the trick in Africa is to integrate climate change in those poverty reduction strategies. That's a very important issue, and it's at this point being helped by UNDP. UNDP has a new program that I will just mention briefly afterwards. A barrier to that collaboration is that those regional governments are very much taken up with domestic issues. So to liberate somebody to be active on the international level and to collaborate and to go to conferences, and look, I'm the only European here, but in principle, I would think it should be somebody from Scotland, or at least one from, let's say, from the United States, whatever state you want, California, so that they should be here to exchange directly with you. So even they have either they cannot because their budget has not, has not applied to it, so there's no budget for this international traveling in a state government, or it's just because they don't have the time. They are dealing with daily business all the way, so that's one of the barriers on that cooperation, and this is not to underestimate. I've been in this forum longer than I work for the climate group. I've actually founded together with some colleagues the network that I mentioned in Johannesburg 7 years ago, and we encounter this problem all the time. So there has to be commitment, political commitment, to appoint somebody in the government to say, okay, you're going to work at the international level and you're going to exchange your best practices, because otherwise it won't happen. And then again, you come back to the high-level approach that we have. Just because I'm from Europe, I thought, okay, I'll give you some European examples. These are the only ones, I think, at the whole seminar, so I thought it was rightful to do so. Some of them may already be outdated. I think for North Rhine-Westphalia, their target has already been a bit stricter. If you don't know those regions, Scotland, I guess you know. Catalonia, yeah, you must know because it's Latin America here, so do you know them? Bavaria and North Rhine-Westphalia are the two most important states in Germany, and we have a close collaboration with them. Sao Paulo, there's a lot to say about it. I picked out this one because this was really interesting. It's already 7 years ago, but it was really interesting that a state was able to set the international agenda with this proposal, with this renewable energy coalition. So I picked out this example for Sao Paulo, and then the other close cooperation we have is with the Western Cape, which is honestly one of the more wealthy provinces of South Africa, but they can be, their international connections can help their other provinces in South Africa to speed up as well and to join common efforts. Again, a lot of logos, and this is my introductory slide to the UNDP program. And you see there's a lot of partners involved. It's UNITAR, it's the PNUE, I have the nice Spanish abbreviation, so the UNEP, UN Habitat and UNDP, which is the leader on this at the UN. And they're doing this in collaboration with these other networks, of which the climate group represents one, but there is the others I mentioned. OLAGI you recognize, there is Assembly of European Regions. The network FOGAR is an umbrella organization of different associations, so that aims to be some kind of UN for regions, but I don't think it's there yet. It's a little bit too quick. And that program aims at these integrated, and this is directly linked to the title of today, these integrated climate change plans. And the idea has to have three phases to obviously have this first phase, which is not the most costly, but which can start up. The idea is, with the support of UNDP, to twin. I know I have to be careful about using north and south, but I would say those willing to share with those that are recipients to have some more experience. At this point, most of those partnerships that are being developed, and there is quite a few now, I think there's 20 agreements signed under the UNDP umbrella with these networks. It mostly looks like north-south now, but we don't want to limit it to that. It should be a two-way approach, and hopefully ending up in having these full integrated plans with some capacity building from regions in the north. That said, this program could actually lead by example towards the whole capacity building chapter in the negotiating text for Copenhagen. Maybe getting close to what for technology transfer is necessary. And it also is like a very tiny but a very principal start of direct financing for. Because those regions that you see here, there's a few in Europe, there's Quebec and Manitoba just signed, those two the provinces in Canada. And they have agreements mostly with those partners they already had, or in some cases they identify new partners. Strangely, Wales, for example, is not here, but Wales has a very good collaboration with a province in Uganda, and they have pledged 1 million euro to kick off this program. And it's growing. And this program was already highlighted on Monday during the opening ceremony of the Climate Week in New York, with Ban Ki-moon, with some high officials from the UN, with Tony Blair, obviously, which is somehow the founder, or the co-founder, or he was helping founding the climate group. Tony Blair was there, Mayor Bloomberg. And so we got the high scope there. I will end with that effort for this UNFCCC recognition, because I think it's something that is really being high on the agenda, and it's being directly handed over to Ban Ki-moon, in New York, and it will be done again at the summit that we organize in Copenhagen, for which we invite all governors and presidents of states and regions to Copenhagen to do that summit. I'm just going to take you briefly through the process. This is not just one paper that fell out of the sky. It's something that has been done by Energy 4SD, the network of regional governments, already in the Commission on Sustainable Development at the UN. But since 2005, and very intensively since Poznan, we had an effort that is resulting in this specific recognition, which is a definition that's really important because it's the first level beneath national and above municipal. So we can distinguish it from local, although collaboration is very important. That's the background, what happened. So we had the Montreal Declaration, you had a big summit in Saint-Malo organized by Brittany, and at all these summits, this text has evolved. So we had a first draft, it was approved by all these meetings, also the Governor's Summit last year, and it will be again tabled at the Governor's Summit in California next week, for which I believe there is three or four governors from Brazil that will attend Arnold Schwarzenegger's International Climate Change Summit in California. But last year already this was on the table. We had it tabled in Poznan, of course. Quintana Roo had it on the table, and obviously now at the Climate Week. So that's the history of that one-pager in English, unfortunately, that you have in your documentation, and which is becoming the standard document to convince the UN and the parties and the negotiators to take up that part or that role in their text. And this is just one example on where in the text we introduced this. We had people in Bonn in March, in June. We will have people now traveling, or we had people in Bonn in August as well, but we have people traveling to Bangkok just to convince the parties to include and to keep it included. I don't know how much you follow the international negotiations, but the text on long-term cooperative action is a 200-page document by now, But at least for the first time it has over 40 references in many chapters in technology transfer, in capacity building, specifically to the subnational government. So this is quite new. You may argue if it's important or not. We believe it is. We believe it at every level it's important, but it's vital to convince and to further push those state and regional governments that when there is an agreement, at least they are recognized for the role they play and the huge efforts they already have been putting into this. I will skip this one because we all know what our role is towards the local, and I will end with what we call the road to Copenhagen, and this is what is still to happen. So you see, you could argue this is a proliferation of events, but it has never been before like this, that state and regional governments meet frequently in the preparation of such a summit. So this is also a first time. I think this very meeting as well here in Brazil, in Sao Paulo, is evidence of that. And so you will see what happens is the California summit just next week. There will be a high-level Brussels meeting. We will focus on low-carbon technology in Spain. You will notice two times Spain. This is because the UNFCCC meeting will be in Barcelona, and we will have an international meeting there. So again, also for this meeting, if you want more information, please come to me, and we will invite you to this. So that's an international gathering, the last preparatory meeting before Copenhagen in November. Also, Australia is quite active. Queensland is organizing its own summit. We will be doing a EU members meeting in Brussels in November. And there is, I could go on, and I would. It culminates. It should all culminate in the Climate Leaders Summit, for which we have by now quite a lot of presidents confirmed. And this is going to be on the 15th of December, for which all the governors that are member of the networks I mentioned are kindly invited. So please take the message to your constituencies, to your governments. And if they would have not been informed yet, then they can turn to us and see whether there is interest to attend at the highest level. But we're talking really the leaders of each of those governments. So whatever it may be, governors to presidents. And I can tell you off the record that, again, there will be, we expect quite high media interest. And the reason for that is we may like it, we may not like it, but there is a lot of proof of what the state of California has been doing so far. They have pushed the federal government in the U.S., so they are really key. And for now, we have confirmation also from the governor of California to attend that event, which is in collaboration with the UNDP. So it gives it United Nations credibility. And again, with the famous network of regional governments for sustainable development, that is there. And this is how it would look like. But I'm not going to talk through. This is a classical construction on how that high-level event will look. There will be a closed meeting, and there will be a high-level summit open to the audience and to the public with the media involved. So this is from the side of states and regions with support of the climate group that we want to show when the high-level segment starts in Copenhagen on 15th of December, that from those leaders of states and regions all over the world, there is proof that this is about opportunities, that it is not. There is costs involved, but they will be dispersed over different sectors. So yes, maybe some sectors in the future will have a temporary loss, but they will have to just change into the right direction, and that an international agreement is possible, and it should be proven by the efforts that the states and regions have been doing. And that's how far I wanted to take it from here. So thank you very much. Obrigado. Muito obrigado.